This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Julian Ng, Sharad Kutin, and me, Melissa Idris. Coming up on The Breakfast Grill, Ibrahim Sani will be speaking to the Menteri Besar of Perlis, Datuk Sri Azlan Man. Now, he came to office in 2013 and has big plans for Malaysia's smaller state. He wants to transform Perlis into a high-income urban state by 2030. And what are they doing to achieve this? Well, hopefully, he says, they want to leverage on some incentives by MIDA. But what exactly are they and how will he put this plan into place? We'll ask him on The Breakfast Grill. That's coming up in about 15 minutes or so. But first, French container shipping firms CMA CGM, they are planning to delist Neptune Orient Lines, or NOL, following its takeover of the company.
This is really as a result of the severe downturn in the shipping sector, as we all know, is no doubt caused by the slowdown in the world. And we've seen the crashes in commodity prices and oil prices and so on. Even entire nations and regions are restructuring themselves. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the Middle East and Norway, they want to reduce their reliance on oil. And here are, you know, these shipping companies just restructuring themselves and forcing themselves to amend the way they do things according to the market. So CMA CGM taking over NOL and moving their operations from Malaysia to Singapore. I think that's the more significant factor for us. You know, number one, why are they doing that? Is Malaysia losing out? And number two, what would happen to Westports?
That's right. Westports, according to the Edge Financial Daily, they flagged this as well. Westports poised to lose its largest customer, which is CMA CGM, following the shift of from Malaysia to Singapore. And this could mean a loss of some traffic and shipping volume as well.
30% is what CMA CGM contributes to Westport in terms of 20-foot equivalent containers. That's a huge size. 30% of somebody's business is being moved away to Singapore. But I'm just wondering, this is really counterintuitive because Singapore is supposed to be high cost and Malaysia is supposed to be low cost.
So I wonder what the rationale is.
Have they come up with any explanations? Is there talk that Westport is not efficient, or there are problems with, you know, moving goods across borders? Are there bureaucratic challenges when it comes to Westport?
I think the efficiency argument is a very strong one, because even if Malaysia is cheaper, the efficiency actually does result in money saved or money lost as well. So perhaps that is a very compelling reason for them to move over in Singapore.
Well, you know, in Tony Fernandez and the, I believe a couple of days ago, we talked about how Tony Fernandez wanted to change the KLIA2 into the low-cost carrier terminal to LCCT2 after, it's been, what, 2 years since KLIA2 has been in operation. But, you know, there's been some backlash over that. So Tony Fernandez has said, stop denying that it is a low-cost hub. Let's just admit that it is, because Dong Muang Airport has overtaken KLIA2 as the world's largest LCC airport because it works closely with their customers to bring in the traffic. So he's calling for Malaysia Airports, MHB, to adopt the same approach for it to be relevant again.
I think this is the other reflection of what CMA CGM is doing and moving their operations from Malaysia to Singapore. The world is so open now, so if we don't do things right, other parts of the world will catch up, because Tony Fernandez mentioned that Don Muang Airport has caught up with us. And, you know, Don Muang is a much smaller airport, and yet they are handling a lot more passengers than KLIA, according to Tony Fernandez. And I suppose that's why he wants to rebrand KLIA2 in something that reflects the budget status of that airport.
So is it just a change in name, or is it in fact things like
Well, it's
the
branding,
cost?
Right? It's branding as well. You know, you position KLIA2 as LCCT2, but whether or not that is in line with MHB's bigger vision for KLIA, KLIA2 and the Aeropolis, I think it may go against. So we'll have to see who wins this battle of words. 7:52 right now. Commuters travelling between Singapore and Johor Bahru can soon make use of a new cross-border ride-sharing service because Grab has announced a new service called the Grab Hitch Johor Bahru Singapore Inter-Country Service. That is a mouthful indeed.
So now you can live in JB, like literally live in JB and work in KL because it only costs you 9 ringgit one way from JB to KL, depending on where you're going. I mean, from JB to Woodlands is 9 ringgit, but right to the centre of Singapore into Orchard Road, that's about 20 ringgit. And
JB to Singapore, not KL.
JB to Singapore, yes. JB to Singapore, the heart of Singapore. You're talking about perhaps 50 to 100 ringgit a day, maybe less, a lot less than 100 ringgit, just to live in JB and work in Singapore. And that would have some impact in Johor property pricing, I feel.
Yeah, well, you know, as a JB boy, I can tell you that one of the biggest problems with the causeway, we have two now links between the two countries, have always been the immigration and customs checkpoints. Because, you know, you can have all kinds of manner of transport. You can trains and go through and buses that have been there for the longest time. But if you're going to be in a long queue to get your passport checked, to get your bag searched, then you're just facing the same congestion. It's just a question of perhaps comfort in this case, right?
Well, money is the other thing. The cost consideration is very strong. I think if you can save paying 1,000 Sing dollars or 2,000 Sing dollars in rental in Singapore, or can save yourself buying a really, really expensive house in Singapore, if you live in JB, that might be a better cost substitution for you. That may be very, very compelling for people like that, earning Sing dollars but spending Malaysian type costs.
Oh, so you reckon that having options like this could in fact be a boost to the property market in JB?
It could be, and it could be a boost to JB as a whole, JB and Iskandar as a whole. It'd be very, very exciting to think about how the dynamics of JB and Iskandar with Singapore, how that will pan out. We don't rule out JB becoming a suburb of Singapore.
Well, you know, already I think people in JB import some level of inflation because of their relationship to Singapore. I think it's got one of the highest rates of inflation. You're right. I mean, if Singaporeans can make that commute in ease, and I think it's not just a question of cost, it's also a question of time, and you have an efficient immigration and customs service on both ends, then perhaps this is the way of the future. And I think it was already anticipated over 20 years ago that Singapore needed to reach out to the south, to Batam, to the north, to Johor. And I think Johor is really happy for it. And you can see the developments there really, are kind of synced with Singapore as part of how it sees its economy growing.
I think some people might take a leaf out of the page of CMA-CGM in ignoring costs. And I think you're right, Sharad, in saying that efficiency is very important. If they don't buck up on how the immigration does its job, to maybe just allow these people to have a card which they just waive and which allows them a special line to cross into JB, I think that would make JB and Iskandar an extremely attractive proposition to a lot of these people.
Well, did you know that the causeway and the second link are among the busiest land checkpoints in the world? We were talking about 400,000 crossings in both directions daily. But speaking of Singapore, the Monetary Authority of Singapore will set up dedicated departments to combat money laundering and also strengthen its enforcement. And all these changes will take place by August. The banking regulator has flagged that Singapore's financial sector faces the risk of being used as a conduit for money laundering and terrorist financing activities.
I guess this is the kind of reaction that you get from the 1MDB saga. While it is negative, it's really railing a lot of global regulators to beef up their operations. I mean, these anti-money laundering laws have been around for a very long time. I think Singapore is just, what they're doing right now is just beefing up their operations just to protect that integrity and send that really strong signal to people that you just can't mess around with their financial system.
7:57 right now, and G4S shares in the US fell 5% yesterday after it news emerged that the company had employed the Orlando gunman, Omar Mateen, who killed 50 people in the Florida nightclub. Now, G4S said Mateen was employed at a residential community in South Florida, and the fall in the share price appeared to be prompted by worries that the massacre could damage G4S's ability to win U.S. government contracts. Already, the company describes itself as the largest security solutions provider in the world.
Isn't this wrong? I mean, to I guess detractors would argue that you shouldn't privatize something as important as security. In 2012, G4S was criticized for failing to recruit and train enough security staff ahead of the 2012 London Olympics. Soldiers had to be drafted as a result, and they were also found to be have overcharged all these government regulators for their services. So, is this really in support of not privatizing security?
It's fascinating that he should have been hired by the security firm. He's clearly a gun lover, more than, you know, kind of ideologically driven and a very angry man. But again, a lone wolf situation, which I think presents governments with huge problems, because these are people who are self-radicalized. How do you ferret them out?
But, you know, critics are saying the reason why this company is getting so much criticism is the fact that, okay, so the company did a detailed security screening of Mateen when he was recruited in 2007 and was rescreened in 2013 with no adverse findings. So detractors of the company are saying, well, if you didn't find anything, can we be so sure that you can be that meticulous when executing government security contracts, right? That's the concern, of course.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.